Wanna go, pretty boy?
Two minutes by yourself and you feel shame, you know, and then you get free.
The only thing better than a glass of beer is tea with Miss McGill.
All right, welcome to the Fourth Line Voice Podcast. My name is Darren. Thank you very much for tuning in to episode 74 of the big show. We're not even doing an intro today, folks. I'm not giving you any rambling or nothing. We're just getting right into it. On the line, my boy Steve, returning guest. It must be sweeps week when I get this guy on. Steve, how you doing tonight?
Hey, how you doing, man? How are you? How's everything?
I'm doing very well. I should have said it's all when ProbertWasKing.com is the name of the website, and you've done some fantastic write-ups over this last little while, and you've just come out with the latest one, basically the coming of age of the Jay Miller story, or everyone in Boston hates Chris Nyland story. I don't know how we're going to phrase this, but... But you just finished writing that saga, and I've been meaning to get you on here for a while, because for a while you were tweeting out kind of little blurbs you were calling Legends in Black and White, and between you and the and Jay in Finland spitting the old school stuff out lately, there's been some good shit out there.
Oh yeah, Jay. It's funny because he's been like just a treasure trove of old articles and pictures and stuff like that. It's like he's been sort of like a godsend to the hobby. Every so often someone will kind of pop in and they'll have just all this info and knowledge. And he's really been just as far as keeping the Twitter story going, you know, like he's really, you know, just pumping all that out. But he also helped me out in a way with a lot of these Jay Miller pictures and articles and everything like that that are in the Miller Post. Special thanks to Jay, for all his help. That was really, it's perfect timing. I was, you know, kind of getting ready to wrap it up, and he just sort of popped onto Twitter with all this, you know, information and, you know, like, hey, do you need any of the articles? Just perfect timing. It was fantastic, and he was a big help for the piece.
Yeah, no, he's been, I agree. And he's been great with me in terms of, like even if I'm having a guest on, you know, I get a hold of him and, hey, I'm probably talking to so-and-so next week and, oh, here, I'll get you some stuff. And, you know, yeah, get you some newspaper articles and stuff. And even in there, you know, there's been like a tidbit of a story or something that, you know, I otherwise wouldn't have known. And then, you know, you get to ask the player about it. And then, of course, that leads into a whole bigger story and everything that, we wouldn't have heard, without that article. So it, absolutely. No, he's been great. And plus it's just fun to go back and read the old stuff. Like you said, the old newspaper articles, and it's because Jesus, he was putting stuff up from like, what are we talking, like Sprague Cleghorn stuff, like, oh my god, like,
yeah, well, yeah, yeah, he was going back, yeah, definitely,
you know, so it was
like he's scraping the bowels of the like digital archives, you know, and he's coming up with all these like, you know, gems, and you know, it's like even the some of the modern stuff like that he's posted, just awesome, like some of the pictures, you know, that he's finding, just, you know, it's been great. It's like I like to say, he's just kind of keeping things going with like the hobby and the gaining of knowledge of all of everything in hockey fighting and everything like that. So he's been great.
No, absolutely. And Ellen, like you, yeah, I mean, you and I have lamented about this before on here, but on your other episode or yeah, your other visits on here. But, you know, yeah, like that when the message boards went away, that went away. All that information.
It did. Yeah.
You know,
you're right. It's almost like, we had like those little, I don't know, like I guess you could call it little headquarter places where, hey, I just found this awesome YouTube video. I don't think it's out there. Let me post it here. The guys will love it. You know, and it, boom, instantly got 100 people watching it. And, you know, people were thanking the post and everyone loves it. And it was all right there. You knew all of, instead of like on Twitter where you gotta kind of go back on your profile a million pages to find something, you know, old. Everything was centrally located on those sites, and all that information and knowledge was all collected there. And, you know, Jay would have been perfect for that. You know, he would have had his own forum, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, those places, they're not around, you know, anymore. So, you know, we got to kind of take what we can get, you know, on Twitter and Facebook and whatever. But you know, I'm glad he's come up, because a lot of that stuff, I don't know about you, but a lot of that stuff, I'm like, oh, wow, that's great. You know, an article on Probert or whatever. And it's like, you know, that's just like right up my alley. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. No, the same thing. And like I said, and that's why, well, before we got going, but I've said this on here numerous times, even when you weren't on here. But I mean, for those listening, when Probert was king.com, go back, and Steve has written articles about, you know, your breakdown rivalries and your, of course, your top 25 of all time list that you had, that, I mean, I had you on for that. And, you know, we broke down that article. And, but I mean, to go back and see it in written form. Yeah. I mean, Steve does such a great job with the article, and then including the pictures and the video to go along with the articles. And I mean, it's, yeah, like you said, you can, you could get lost reading your site for a while. So, but I know you hadn't put anything up for a little while until just this week. You put up this whole Bruins Montreal rivalry thing, and basically more or less a written history of Jay Miller, really, in his rookie season. And I was reading that article, and it got me again. I'm like, all right, I got to get Steve on to actually just talk about this, because I enjoyed reading it so much, and you're so thorough that it's amazing when you read this stuff. It's like, you know, because of course you and I and the people that within the hobby, we have so much, we have video and we've seen all this stuff, but there's just I think, for myself anyway, it's like I think I've watched so much stuff, I'm starting to forget what I've seen. You know?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, and it was funny because, like I said, reading your article there, and you have the YouTube clips, you start watching it, and it's like, I remember seeing this on an old tape years ago, but you forget, like, how good that fight was, or how good, you know, and then you start going down that rabbit hole. Because it's funny in your article, well, we'll get into it obviously more here right away, but when you talk about Curran, you know, and it's like, you know, you see Leafs Curran, and it's like, you know, okay. But, I mean, you got me thinking about it. He wasn't bad in Boston, though. And he'd get in there.
No, he was, yeah, he was. The one thing I loved about him, and I actually touched on it, is the guy had no fear. I mean, he was a bigger guy anyway, you know, but the guy had no problem taking on Dave Brown, you know, or Probert. Like, he had no, and he would just jump right in there, too. You know, he was one of those guys I really loved about him. The only beef with Curran would be just be kind of like his fighting style. He was sort of like just a wild all out and fall down kind of fighter, you know. And you know, it was kind of like the only drawback to him is he was, you know, ballsy as all hell. But you know, he was probably falling down in that fight.
Oh yeah, exactly. But it's just like you forget some of these guys. You just forget the incidents after a while, and you need kind of the refresher course. And, so it was funny, even just talking about Jay Miller. I always say he's one of those guys growing up. I was never a Miller guy. I could never put my finger on why. I never knew why I didn't like, for some reason, I just didn't like him. I fully appreciate him now, but, you know, back when they first started getting tapes and stuff, and I was a teenager and whatever, oh, this fucking Miller guy, you know, it's just like, I don't know. There was something about him, but, yeah. So going back and watching the YouTube clips and everything of him, it's like, yeah, I mean, he was, I mean, you'd give your left arm to have a guy in the league like that now.
Oh my God. You're right.
You know, and just, you know, and the rivalry and. But we'll just get into this article. What was your what was your inspiration for writing it, how did you stumble upon the Jay Miller rookie thing or the decline of the Bruins? I mean, there's a million things you could write about, but what made you pick this topic?
Well, when I started doing that Legends in Black and White series, the whole idea was to just kind of keep it like old school stuff, you know, back in the days, like the early, you know, posts that I was posting had, you know, pictures that they look like Wild West gunslinger wanted posters, you know what I mean? It was kind of just, you know, that's what it was about, like the Legends in Black and White before, you know, color, you know, came into our world. And I was just going to push it right up into the Broad Street Bully era. Yep. And just kind of let it ride and then just stop. And then it just got such a huge response that it kind of took on a life of its own. And it was like every day I was like, I just loved Matt, you know, putting the little picture collages together. And, you know, every time I come home from work, I was like, all right, you know, I got to get these done. I got to get this guy, you know, taken care of. And each year I kind of follow along. And as I came across the 80s, you know, you know about all this stuff, but as you're going over it from the inception of the NHL, you know, you're starting from the very, very beginning, you know, of the league, and even before that, and I just slowly worked my way, like, you know, decade by decade, year by year, until, you know, we got into the 80s, and then you start to see some of the things you never really thought of. I'm like, wow, there was actually a little bit of a brief lull in the sort of big, bad Bruins, you know, style of play. You know, they kind of fell off after Wentzink, Seymour, Jonathan, all those guys left, and it was just sort of like O'Reilly there for a little bit. And, you know, as I'm doing the Legends in Black and White, I just started seeing this, like, oh, you know, this is actually make a pretty good little story here, and, you know, that's sort of where it all started from.
Yeah, well, and that was like, yeah, exactly, and that was kind of what, you know, and exactly when I started reading the article, yeah, and I mean, you obviously certainly investigate this and go deeper than I do. So it was like, I never would have dawned on me to think, but I start reading the article. It's like, yeah, Bruins were kind of soft. Holy shit. You know? And it's like, you start thinking about it.
Well, it's funny. I always caution people, and I actually make note of it in this story that they never really got soft. They always had guys that were willing, but they just didn't have like, This was a team that had some of the best fighters in the game, you know, at one point. And O'Reilly was one of them. And then you kind of see this area where it's kind of like during the O'Reilly captaincy, those couple of years right at the end of his career, where, you know, he was breaking down physically and he was nowhere near the kind of fighter that he once was. And he's kind of looking around and he's like, hey, Bruce and Keith Crowder on one side. And, you know, and he's, you know, looks over on the other side. He's got John Blum. You know, and you start to kind of see, like, all right, there's definitely a falling off. And, you know, you could sort of see how a situation like a Chris Nyland, you know, butt-ending Rick Middleton can occur. You know, there's no, you know, major on-ice deterrent to stop a guy like Nyland. And, you know, he knows it, you know. And you have a situation like this that kind of almost reignites a whole rivalry all over again. And then comes Jay Miller.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, like you said, okay, well, we'll start, you know, with especially the Bruins in the 70s, you know, throughout the 70s. And then, you know, and then, of course, with the, you know, when the Broad Street Bullies in the mid 70s and stuff. So everybody reacting to that. But of course, then you have Don Cherry in there coaching and stuff. And I mean, you know, this is the era of the Wincink and the Jonathan and the Cashman and Al Secord and Terry O'Reilly. And it's like, you know, you forget, but man, oh man, like they legit were the big bad Bruins without a doubt.
Oh yeah. And it's funny when you start to see them when, like, after the John Cherry era ended and they slowly started to kind of, like, you know, underachievers, they started getting rid of some of the tough guys, and, you know, Wentzink and Secord, and, you know, you can kind of see a bit of a drop off, you know, whereas the Flyers sort of just remained, you know, one of the top toughest teams in the league, you know, all the way up into the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, there was really, they always had those couple go-to guys, you know, even during this time. And with the Bruins, there was definitely a falling off in the quality of the guys that they had, you know, and it was, you know, noticeable. And it's noticeable for me because I'm going over all this, you know, like videotape, and I'm always watching this, and I'm into this is my thing, you know, so I can kind of, I pick up on these sort of things. But as a fan myself, you know, I was a young Bruins fan at that time. I was a kid, you know, but, you know, when that was a big thing when Nylund did that to Nifty, and it was kind of a huge thing, especially in my neighborhood, being a sports-centric neighborhood, Nylund became, you know, public enemy number one.
Well, yeah. Well, just to kind of go away from our story here for a second on the in terms of the timeline, but yeah. So I mean, and how odd back then. I mean, it's touched on in Nylund's documentary, but I mean, so he's on Montreal, so he's hated already. But then he does the thing to Middleton, and it's like just the fact that he is a Boston guy too, like from the area, playing for Montreal. Comes back and does that to one of the beloved Bruins. It's like just so many storylines in there.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. I guess it's weird because, you know, now you're like, you're not welcome in your hometown anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, I don't mean to take it to extremes, but I was a fan, you know, and he was kind of like the first player. I was like, I hate him. You know, I hate what he did to that, you know, my favorite player. You know, I was a young kid at the time, impressionable. And, you know, now, you know, at the time, I didn't really realize the whole Bruins toughness. I shouldn't say issue. They already had, you know, willing guys and everything like that. But, you know, now, you know, looking back, you could say, oh, well, you know, there wasn't really, they didn't have those, that big ace anymore. They had, you know, they had Curran, you know, he was a guy that they could rely on. You know, but, you know, at the time, you're just like, wow, I hate this guy now, and we got to do something about him, you know. But it was kind of interesting having growing up during that time. And then, you know, in hindsight now, writing something about it, you know, as a fan myself, you know, so that was part of the fun.
Well, yeah. And it would be interesting what the Bruins' reaction would be when Nylund signed with Boston after all these years.
You know, it's funny, as a fan, I wasn't fooled. And he goes, oh, he wants, he's coming to Boston now. He's going to have to really prove something to me, you know. That's kind of the way I looked at it is when I first heard about it.
Yeah.
You know, because of everything that had happened, you know, I was still young and still, you know, as you grow older, you let all that stuff go. I love Nylund now. But at the time, it was like, oh, you know, he was always like a villain to me. And, you know, it was hard to, you know, as the fan in me, it was hard to set that aside, you know, even when he came to Boston, you know.
No, and
he also knew he was a little bit past his prime too. You know, kind of,
yeah.
Not get like, you know, that prime Nylund, you know, but it was all good. Now I look back, I kind of laugh at it now. But
well, it was funny, like when it came to Nylund, I hated Nylund growing up, and again, the same. I don't know why. It wasn't like I grew up in Boston. I mean, I don't know why. I just didn't like him for some reason, and I don't know what it was. And you know, and then after watching his documentary. It was like I had a whole new respect. I mean, I respected him anyway at that point, but I mean, after you watch the documentary, it was like, and you hear some of his stories, I'm like, oh, this guy's pretty badass, actually. And then, of course, that in seeing that, you go back and you start going back onto YouTube and you start watching all the old Nylund stuff, and it was like, you know, goddamn, this guy's pretty good, actually. Like, I always kind of thought he sucked, and then all of a sudden you go back and you watch his stuff, and it was like, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a more willing guy. I mean, in terms of like a fight card and frequency, it's like, I mean, what more do you want, right? And I mean,
only that, but he was under 6 feet, and for a good stretch there, he was by himself, all by his lonesome.
Yeah.
You know, like taking on Playfair and Cochran and Wilson, and there was nobody else, you know. Occasionally they would have somebody roll through, but it was very brief, you know. But until Kordick, they didn't really have a regular guy come along, so it was, you know, I've kudos to him. When you look back, like you said, you look back like, wow, I can't believe he fought, you know, X amount of times, and he was always there taking on the biggest and baddest fighters too, you know, big series against Dave Brown, Playfair, you know, he fought them all.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you'd know better than I would, but I'm just thinking back to his fights. I mean, you know, yeah, he didn't, you know, obviously no one ever wins them all, but I mean, I don't remember ever Nyland getting KO'd or anything. Do you? Like,
no, I think I remember. I can't remember if it was Greg Adams. I forget exactly, but I saw him get dropped. Didn't see him get like KO'd or anything like that. You know, he reminded me of like Darren Langdon in that regard. Like, he just, not a very big guy, taking on much bigger opponents, but he had a style, like a kind of like a technical style that sort of, you know, served him well. And as far as not being, having to take all that punishment, he wasn't one of those like Ron DeLorme toe-to-toe warriors or anything like that. You know, he had a very cautious style, used his stamina, you know, mixed in, you know, but very good at tying up, you know, and you can preserve yourself a lot longer. And you're right, I don't really recall him ever being like devastated in a fight, you know,
no,
or anything like that.
No, absolutely. And
yeah, he's another guy I have big respect for. I don't know if where you'd rank Chris Nyland all time. I remember debating this in the past, you know, but, you know, he just one of those guys you kind of like look at his overall career, you know, and you're just like, wow, can't, you know, look at the fight card this guy had.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, we go back to the message board days, right? Like, I first got back, get on there in the late 90s, and, you know, and I still kind of, you know, at that point, I always respected the job Nyland did, but I was still in the camp of, he kind of sucked, you know, and then, but you'd have guys on fried chicken, like pumping his tires, right? And you'd be just like, what, Nyland, are you serious? Like, come on, man. But I mean, as time has gone on, and like I said, you watch some more video on him, and it's like with a little more critical eye, and it was like, I'm glad that if the message boards were still around, I think I'd have to go back and delete a few posts, I think, you know, because pretty solid. But
yeah, he was.
Yeah. Well, like you said,
he was also a motherfucker too.
Oh,
well, that's kind of one of the things about him. It's kind of like there was no middle ground. You kind of loved him or you hated him. And, you know, if you were a Montreal fan, you loved him, but yeah, you know, he certainly added some spice to that rivalry. But he, you know, I literally think he kind of reignited that rivalry in the '80s when he did that. Plus the bench clearer the next year.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, well, that was another huge thing. It's like, oh, there he is again. Jesus, what are we gonna do about this guy?
Yeah, no, you know, exactly. But, well, I mean, they had to, the maintenance crew got involved at Boston Garden just because of him, right? Building up the Nyland Gate or whatever, and I think that was the name of it, you know, because of that brawl.
Yeah, that was funny. It was funny. Yeah, it's too funny. Kenny Lindman running his mouth is hilarious, but just a funny sequence of events. But again, shows just how much of a thorn in the Bruins side Nyland could be.
No, absolutely. Well, like you said, kind of in the, when we're, you know, we're going through the 70s and into the early 80s, and, you know, the Bruins are starting to, you know, kind of, you know, like you said, O'Reilly's sort of the lone guy there in terms of, like, I guess, names. I'm using air quotes, names, I guess. But, you know, and he certainly is, you know, well past his prime. And but that just looking through your article, and I didn't realize it at the time, but it was, that 82 and kind of 83 draft. I mean, I think obviously the Bruins recognized it. I mean, you know, with Kluzak and Kern and Lyndon Byers and Nevin Marquardt all getting drafted in those 2 years.
You're right, yeah. And I forgot, too. At the time, I think he was billed as somewhat of a tough guy, but we had Bob Sweeney, I think, in the 83 draft as well. And even though he wasn't really a prototypical tough guy, he would, you know, supply some sandpaper. He was a college player, you know what I mean? But, you know, you can definitely see they were looking at their issues with defense on the blue line, you know, and they want to pick up Kluzak and Kern. You know, and Kluzak was another one of those guys who had, you know, tremendous potential, just a lot of injury problems. And he also, as we've seen, he was willing to, you know, flat out brawl if he had to, not like a, you know, a top 10 contender or anything like that, but he would take on a Brown. He would take on a Jim Kite or a Probert. You know, he was one of those guys. And Karen was similar, not as much offensive potential from him. He was more of just a physical, tough D man, you know, and I think that you know, the Bruins liked his toughness and grit, you know, and I think he was actually kind of the guy, you know, as far as fighting went for the Bruins, you know, for a very brief period, you know, kind of like the one guy you could kind of look to because he had that size, you know, but, you know, then, you know, eventually Miller wound up coming along, But you could see there was sort of a, you know, especially the response game. When you look at the, all right, Nylon just sat down. He was just sat for 8 games after buttoning with Middleton. And the Bruins need to respond now that he's back. And Curran goes right at it. And you're kind of like, eh. You know, the fights just weren't what you wanted. You, as a fan, you wanted to see a total demolishing or a great fight. And the fights, you know, Curran was tied up and struggled with Nylon's, you know, technical ability. And, you know, it was a response, but probably not like the one that they really wanted. And, you know, shortly after that, they brought in Jay Miller.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's, you know, 85-86 season.
Yeah.
With Miller. And, yeah, and, you know, again, interesting, you know, with Miller, which is kind of surprising. He's a college guy.
Yes.
You know, you'd always sort of expect it, you know, at that time frame, you know, always going to get a guy from the Western League, right? You know, like Curran and Kluzak and those guys, and Byers and Marquardt, they're all from the Western Hockey League, you know.
You're right, yeah.
So, but all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, here comes, well, and he's a local guy, or a Massachusetts guy anyway, and it's like, all right. So it's just like almost, it's just another layer to the story, right? Now we're gonna send another, you know, Massachusetts guy, a couple Boston boys, you know, set to square off, you know, in response to Nylon, you know, we'll get another local to go after him. It's like, Jesus, what is this, Saturday Night in Southie, for Christ's sake? You know, this is Goodwill Hunting to life.
The funny thing too is the Canadians actually had another young tough kid, Stevie Rooney, who they would call up on occasion for a few years. And he's another Canton, Mass native. It's strange what was going on at Montreal raiding Massachusetts for tough guys.
Well, yeah, and it sounds funny as we're talking now because, you know, kind of as hockey's become a lot more globalized now, obviously, it's, you know, but still, we're talking early, mid-80s. I don't know, for lack of a better term, it was still always sort of viewed as a Canadian game. You know what I mean? It was just sort of like, you know, you got your tough guy. Like I said, you got your tough guys from the Western League. That's just that's how it happened. And so, but it was interesting that kind of Massachusetts area toughness at the time. If you go back and look, there were some dudes coming out of there.
Oh yeah, yeah. You're right. It's and I always found it odd that I'm like, I can't believe that these two kids from Massachusetts play for Montreal. It just boggled my mind, you know, as a Bruins fan. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's another thing about Noah too that I love that I remarked in the piece is I just love the fact that he was kind of like one of us. You know, he was just like a native. You know, he saw that video of Nylon Button in Middleton and. You know, he must have been right even then, like, all right, oh, I can't wait to get my hands on him, you know, because he felt the rivalry. He was a Bruins fan, too. So it's, you know, there was something more there with Miller than most tough guys in Boston, you know. Some guys, they come up, they're sort of like nameless faces at first, you know. And with Miller, it was already like, oh, Natick Natives, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you kind of get this sort of like local boy feel and everything like that. And, you know, of course, like you said, with Nylon also being a West Roxbury native, it sort of added a whole other layer. It's, you know, a pretty cool little tale. And that whole first year for Miller, it's all about that rivalry. I mean, he has 4 fights with Nylon, you know, in a short amount of time, you know, and those divisional rivalries were so, you know, heated at the time. And Miller jumped right in with Nylon. He didn't waste any time, you know, he didn't waste any time taking on the best in Dave Brown in his first NHL fight. And then, you know, he fights Nylon 4 times, Craig Fox. It was Miller time at that point.
Well, yeah, that was the interesting thing with, like I remember I've seen the fights and everything, but I was really surprised. I didn't realize that Dave Brown fight was his first NHL fight. I mean, talk about, like you said, we're just jumping right in, AJ. Okay, well. You know,
it's funny. What I really loved about that fight too, even though it wasn't really a big fight, and Brown would get the W for me if I was going to score it. But at the end, when Miller gets up, he kind of smacks his hands together, like kind of like, "Fuck, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do." You know,
Yeah.
You know, it was a little frustrating there, but you could just tell, I just love that kind of fire. Like, all right, I'm going to get him next time, you know. And they had a couple of really good bouts over the years when he was with Boston and Dave was still in Philly. It was, you know, and again, just like now. And, you know, Miller wasn't an overly huge guy, relied on a technical skill, you know, to win fights and everything like that. So it was great seeing the styles play off on those big, huge, monster, tough guys. Very interesting.
Well, and the other thing, like you said, it's as you, I didn't really, now that you say it, I see it now. Like when Miller gets up and he's kind of like fired up, that, you know, there's been a lot of guys that fought Dave Brown that couldn't get to the penalty box fast enough. And let's hope we don't make eye contact again, you know, and then, you know, not, and I don't blame him. But then here's a guy who's like, you know, right out of the gate. I mean, okay, yeah, he's a rookie and whatever, but it's like, you know, he wanted it again, like as fast as he could get it, right?
Yeah.
And it was like,
you're right.
And it's like right there that, to me, if I was like coach or whatever, a GM, I'd be like, okay, that's our guy, you know, because it's like,
absolutely.
Yeah. And it's like I said, I've always said this I've said this on the show numerous times, but like the whole win loss thing, I said, that's like fan shit. You know, it's like when you're on a team and you're, you know, like I could imagine the Bruins bench when they saw Miller do that and just like go right at Brown right away, first period, you know, rookie, you know, and you go after big, bad Dave Brown, and then you get up and you're like kind of fired up about it and you want more. It's, I mean, they had to be pretty fucking pumped with this guy.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. And especially too, by 85, 86, Brown was kind of like the man in a short amount of time. He had already kind of put himself up there. So, and a scary guy. I mean, you hear me, I call him the Terminator. You know what I mean? T21 for the Philadelphia Flyers, Dave Brown.
Yeah.
You know, he was legit 6'5" softball Terminator. And like you said, anybody just showing up against him, you know, kind of gave you a boost in people's minds, you know. But Jay Miller, it was like one of those things with when O'Reilly first broke in with the Bruins, you could tell he wanted to be the policeman. Miller wanted to be the man. He wanted to be the equalizer out there. And right away, I'm taking on Brown. You know, so that's right there, sending a message. And that's another, like you said, everyone loves Miller for that kind of thing. He would take him on 20 times if he had to.
No, exactly, and like you said with the Brown thing, I mean, you know, he had been there for a couple seasons, and yeah, like you said, it was kind of the NHL because Probert really hadn't got going yet. I mean,
yeah, that was his rookie year.
Yeah,
and Brown had already been in for a couple seasons.
Yeah, so Probert wasn't Probert just yet. He was getting there, but I would say at that moment, Brown, it was sort of whatever, it was sort of Brown's league at that time, you know, or he was the new age, like you said, the new, he was the new age tough guy. And then, you know, Probert obviously, you know, in the next couple of seasons kind of, you know, whatever, would 1A, 1B, we'll put it that, we'll say that with Brown.
You're right, exactly. That's a good way of putting it.
You know, but like you said, but, you know, Miller never backed away from Probert either, right?
And, no.
You know.
And, no, they had a couple fights, being in different conferences, you know, like they could, you know, obviously they weren't in the same, they weren't seeing each other as much as Brown and Miller, you know, but you know if Probert played for Buffalo or something like that, they would have fought 12 times.
No, no, exactly. And, but yeah, just kind of going through that, like that 85, it's funny with that, I actually got a DVD, or maybe it's 86, now that I think, I'm saying it out loud, I think it's an 86, 87 Bruins DVD. But, again, once you get a kind of a team DVD or a player DVD, you don't realize it until you get a concentrated DVD. Because most of the DVDs I always had, VHS tapes, I guess, back then, or DVDs, but now, but were always assorted. So you never really got a feel,
because
it was all just all over the place, right? But and I was always more of an assorted guy. I never wanted, like, player tapes or team DVDs. But as I've gotten more over the years, and you see sort of the so you can, especially a team DVD, because you can, and if it's done well and done right, you can see this stuff develop as the year goes on throughout the tape, right? And it was, and it was an 86, 87 Bruins DVD. And, Nevin Marquardt wasn't bad. And he fought a lot more than I thought he did. And I'm watching this DVD, and I'm like, this son of a bitch is on every second, third fight with that terrible helmet. And it's like...
It was brutal.
It's just like, what are you doing, man? I never got that.
Yeah, but you know what, though? He was kind of like, the Bruins always had, like, one of those, like, you know, undersized, pound-for-pound type fighters going on. And, you know, like, over the years, they always had a guy like that. And Marquardt kind of was like that era's, you know, version of that pound-for-pound guy. You know, he wasn't like a, you know, a threat to take, you know, the middleweight crown or anything like that. But he was a well-known guy, and he would surprise the occasional tough guy, you know. He was actually wasn't too bad sometimes.
No, exactly, and just going through this DVD, it was 86, because Neely's on it. But, I mean, you had Neely, and then, you know, Reed Larson would show up every once in a while, and, you know, Milbury would stick his nose in there, and, you know, whatever. And I was just hoping somebody, yeah. I was just hoping every time somebody would drill him. But, you know, but at that point, Byers was still sort of up and down, you know, and, yeah, speaking of which.
Yeah, it took him a few years, like, to really kind of, I don't think his first, like, real full year was, like, 87, 88, I want to say. And he,
yeah.
You know, and it was kind of funny because he had some cameos prior to that. You know, he really didn't stick, you know, for too long. But, you know, I always thought that was interesting because that was sort of like his, you know, they drafted him and then no one kind of came. You know, it's like, all right, now they got two of them. But what a great duo they were for a few years.
Well, and I think, and that's the big thing with Lyndon Byers. And I think you know, with his personality and everything as well. What I think people don't realize is how good Lyndon Byers was as a player. And the sad thing is you never got to see it at the NHL level because he was always hurt. And I mean, through his own stories, he was a party guy and never kind of really gave a shit and whatever. But if you go back and you talk to people, when he played with the Regina Pats, I mean, he played for Team Canada on the World Junior team. Like, he had back-to-back 30-goal seasons. He was a power forward in the WHL. He was a second-round pick. Like, I'm just looking, 58 games, 32 goals, 57 assists, 154 minutes, 23 playoff games that year, 35 points. I mean, the guy could play. He was good. And like I said, he was on the World Junior team, and it was like, yeah, he was a solid player. And you just never really saw that in the NHL. But like you said, his first full season, though, even with the Bruins, that 87-88, 53 games, he had 10 goals, you know, and 236.
Yeah, it's funny. You don't even think of that.
No, and I mean, he was a good player.
Yeah, just think of the fights and everything like that, yeah.
Yeah, and he showed 24 points in 53 games, 236 minutes. I mean, he knew what he was there for, but it was like...
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, he had skills, but he just kind of, you know, whatever, partied his way out of the league, basically. Well, he was injured a lot, and... You know, and like, and some really shitty injuries for a fighter, like hands and shoulders, and you know, it's
I remember him trying to like fight through a broken hand too. It was like that'd be unheard of today, but he's trying to fight John Cordick with a big cast on him. Like, you know, it was funny, but the things guys would do back then, you know. But,
oh yeah,
but LB was what a tough guy. You know, he was a perfect guy. It's funny, he was a heavyweight to me, but I never really thought of him as kind of like the number one guy. I thought he was just a perfect number two heavyweight. You know, he could take on some big names. But if you notice, it was always Miller taking on the Browns and Progress. Spires never really, it's weird, he never really kind of stepped. I mean, he did take on some tough guys. He dropped Cochran. I know Cochran was at the end of his career, you know, and... he did fight, you know, Larry Playfair, you know, and, you know, Kenny Baumgartner. So he took on some, you know, some top guys, you know. I don't want to make it sound like he was spot picking or anything like that. I think Jay Miller was one of those guys. It was like sort of like, I got Brown, you got whoever else, you know, I got Proby tonight, you can go take on Gallant, you know, or something like that. It was, you know, I never liked these are some of the toughest men I've ever known, you know, so I would never say that, oh, he was avoiding Probert or Brown or anything like that. I just think with Miller, it was like, that's my guy.
No, I agree. Yeah, I think I always looked at Byers as a wingman kind of guy and, you know, could do it if he...
Yeah,
needed,
like,
you know.
I think there was a brief time where he was, you know, after Jay left to L.A., where Byers was kind of the man in Boston briefly, and, you know, it was all right, you know, but... I just never viewed him as a, kind of like the sole guy, like the number one guy that, you know, he always seemed like, you know, a great complimentary enforcer.
No, I agree. Yeah. But yeah, with Miller, I was going to ask you, you obviously being a local and stuff, and you briefly touched on it, but, you know, when he came up in 85, I mean, I guess at that point you're still pretty young, so, you know, but, in your, I know you do a lot of research and stuff and a lot of reading. Did he come up with a lot of fanfare, or was it just sort of like he showed up one day and it's like, fuck, we got Carl Racky playing for us now. You know, who is this guy?
No, to be honest with you, that's kind of like what it was. If you look at, I don't know if you have a chance to look at like some of his stats, he got drafted by the Nordiques.
Yes.
And then he went right to the University of New Hampshire to play. And when he came back, he really didn't like play a lot when he came back before, the Bruins picked him up. You know, so, and then he spent that, you know, that the beginning parts of 85, 86 with Moncton. And it's interesting, too, because prior to that, I don't really think he had a chance to really create much of a buzz about himself, so to speak. And I just heard that, I remember, like, when he first came on, I just said, oh, yeah, this is a guy from, you know, from Natick. You know, he's a tough guy for the Bruins. Okay. You know, that was kind of like, that was him taking on Brown and Allen, and that's when you first heard about him, you know. It wasn't like a huge, and at the time, too, it wasn't like today, we were all over these guys from, you know, we can watch them all in the AHL now on YouTube, and then you already know about them as they come in. Back then, it was a lot of word of mouth, and what you got out of the Boston Herald or the Boston Globe, for a scouting report on these guys, you know, that's pretty much all I knew about them.
Yeah, well, and like you said, he really didn't even come out of the Bruins system, you know.
Like no. You know, he played sparingly. Yeah. With like Fredericton briefly, you know, and I don't really think he got much time.
No, and then it's like he's in like the Atlantic Coast in the Mohawk Valley, and you know, and then the Muskegon Lumberjacks and the IHL, and you know, like I'm pretty sure, you know, like you said, there wasn't a lot of people watching Muskegon games back then to give the lowdown on Jay Miller, but
yeah.
I was gonna, well, like I don't even, is there any like even footage of him from back then?
There's some Moncton footage.
Yeah.
There's some Moncton footage out there.
Yeah.
I don't know about, like, the Mohawk Valley or anything like that. I'm not, you know, I don't know if there's any Fredericton footage. I'm not sure. I haven't stumbled across any, but definitely a couple Moncton fights.
Yeah, I remember those, but it's like, but even that, the Muskegon Lumberjacks in the eye in 84, 85, I'm like, I don't remember seeing any Miller IHL stuff. I'm like,
yeah. It's funny, you're gonna have me like digging through to see if I have something.
Well, I was just like as we're talking, I'm just, you know, you start getting these flashes in your head. It's like, okay, have I seen any of this stuff? You know, it's like, you know, it's funny, like when I'm going through Hockey DB and just stuff like that, and you see guys, and it's just like you instantly start, okay, is there a video of that? Is there a DVD of that tape of that year? You know. So I start checking your list,
can and I Zoltan's use list. As a reference source?
And, yeah, I'm like, is there footage? Yeah, most of the time there isn't, but it's like, I got to check Steve's list. I got to check Zoltan's list. Do they have fight tapes here? Yeah, no one's got that year. Okay, never mind. You know, but yeah, it's funny how everything instantly goes back to, like, the fight tapes.
You're right. Is there footage of him playing for the Lumberjacks? Maybe there is. Well, you know, it's funny, too. You go back and you look at like an old Muskegon tape or DVD, and now that you know Miller's on it, or he could possibly be on it, you're looking for like, you know, one of those like non-audio fights.
Yeah.
And it's like shot from afar, and you're hoping that you can tell Jay Miller's style.
Yeah.
You're like, oh wait, that might be him. You know what I mean? Like, because you've seen it. There's a lot of fights that are either in French, or you get these fights that have like no audio at all to them, or they got just all music overdubbed on it. And you're trying to figure out who's fighting. You have no list to go off, you know. But now you find out. Oh wait, Jay Miller fight that year. Oh, let me see. Is his old telltale in close style, you know, on display? You know, maybe I can ID him that way.
Yeah, what number was he? Oh, of course, that's the 1 year HockeyDB doesn't have the numbers listed. Awesome. Okay.
You know. You're right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to shoot from the far corner. Yeah, it's there's I have a million minor league tapes like that. It's just like, you know,
fans head in the way or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or all of a sudden you get like the what tape was it now? But it was one of those tapes that had no sound. And it was shot from kind of, you know, yeah, they certainly, or they, you know, they'd zoom in halfway through or whatever, but it was sort of, you didn't really, and all of a sudden you get the, I don't know who I got the fight list from. Somebody, oh, I got a list for that tape. Really? Oh, okay. So they send it over. So I start reading the list. I'm like, son of a bitch, that guy played on that team? Like, oh, okay. Then you go back, and you put the tape back in, and now you're starting to, you know, you get the list out, and you're looking at the list while the tape's playing, and you're like, oh, son of a bitch, that is him. Okay, well, now I can see it, you know, and it's like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter how bad the announcers were, you miss them when they're not on that tape, I'll tell you that.
Oh, you're right, yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Just for ID purposes.
Yeah. I will listen. I will even listen to Sam Rosen at this point just to tell me who the hell is on my tape. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they got this guy out there again. They got Jody Wood out there again. You know, they really need this, John. Do they really need this, John?
You know, I was watching a fight the other night, and it was a preseason fight. It's somebody with the Rangers, and there's Rosen just crying. He doesn't understand why it's happening. Really, Sam? You don't know why they're fighting in the preseason? You have no idea? Yeah, okay. Yeah, you don't understand.
Is this necessary?
Yeah, you don't know why Dean Ewan's running around trying to make a name for himself. You don't understand that. Okay. Okay, Sam. You know, it's like, oh, and this clown's in the Hall of Fame? Are you kidding me? God. Awful. Don Cherry isn't in the Hall of Fame, but Sam Rosen is. Yeah, that's where we are as a society.
JD would bring him back. Sometimes JD would, like, you know, hit him up with a little knowledge. You know, he knows how it is. He would bring Sam back sometimes. You know, like, oh, well, he's trying to prove himself, Sam. You know, oh, yeah, but doing this, it's just necessary.
Yeah, but everyone, yeah, oh, just listened to whine. Oh, it was brutal. And I mean, I like Davidson, but even he'd get whiny sometimes too. I mean, he'd get a little homery, but overall, he was pretty good overall. But he'd start whining with Rosen sometimes, but. But I remember saying, it was just a little while ago, I said to Sam Rosen's in the Hockey Hall of Fame and Don Cherry isn't. That's where we are, folks. Yeah.
Yep.
God, are you kidding? Yeah. Go around North America and say those two names. Who's going to be more well-known? Yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Most people be like, who? Sam who?
Yeah, exactly. Like, Coach's Corner, Coach of the Year. All that stuff. Nah, don't worry. Let's put Sam in. Okay. You know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. But, well, yeah, so here we are here, right? What did we say at the start of the show? We'll just start rambling and where we're,
just walk down certain paths. Yeah.
Yeah. But like you said, right out of the gate with Miller and Nylund, right there in December, right? The two fights in the one game.
Oh, yeah, that was, you know, basically Miller's, like, second game of the season, that two-fight game. And the first fight was, you know, was great. It was, you know, a good battle, you know, not like an all-time barn burner or anything like that, but it really set the tone for the rivalry. And sadly enough, in the second fight, Nylund kind of mugs Miller. And, you know, it was kind of like... You know, I mean, you don't want to see anything happen like that, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, again, the good thing about it, too, is, you know, my boy Karen was right in there. And I think he actually wound up punching Jay Miller accidentally. If you watch the footage, it looks like he clobbers Miller accidentally trying to get at Nylund. You know, but, yeah, and of course, you know, that little bit of a mug job, too, that helped spice up that rivalry and make it more of a feud. You know, and you could tell Miller was pissed. It was going to be payback. So he was here to stay at that point, you know, and I think the fans loved him already. They were like, you know, who is this guy?
No, exactly. And it's interesting, like you said in the article, you even brought it up, and you kind of look, and it was, you just think, man, just the pressure and, like, just the mental strain that would take, because like you said, he's getting spot shifts at the start, or spot, you know, he's not playing every game. The games he does play, it's like, okay, we'll dress you against Philly. Well, Montreal's coming, so, you know, we need you for that. You know, well, we got Buffalo coming up. We'll throw you in there, too, you know, but we won't play you against these guys. You know, it's just like, I couldn't imagine. And I think that gets so overlooked when you talk about the role, with just in general with the enforcer role. And I know having guys on the show and talking about it and everything, and just the mental toll that the role would take on a guy. Unbelievable.
Oh yeah, you're right. You know, no one. It's like that Tony Twist saying. You know, every day you're going to be taking on that you know, the toughest kid in town.
Yeah.
At 3 o'clock, you know, it's one of those kinds of things. And you know, it's funny because we talk about some of those old classical era guys, like Clark Gillies, like is an example, you know, or even the guy like Larry Playfair. You know, these are big, heavy punchers who could put heads to bed and everything like that, but they weren't really, like, wired to be, like, fighting and hurting people, like, all the time. You know, it's kind of, it's interesting. You needed a sort of a certain mindset, you know, of a person, you know, to kind of play that role. You know, there's, you know, almost like, you know, you weren't afraid to go over that line and you know, let the chips fall where they may. Whereas some people, they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to be that guy all the time. I think that's one of the reasons why Gillies kind of slowed down. I don't think he wanted to be the go, you know, the enforcer, you know, or anything like that. And I think even Playfair, I forget, he fought somebody at the end of his career and he went up, you know, hurting him real bad. And it was just like, you know, I just can't, you know, you start having second thoughts, you know. But I think guys like Jay Miller, you know, he sort of has that right mentality where he's, you know, this is what's going to keep him in the league, and so he's going to go at it every night and take on the toughest guy. And, you know, but you're right, you know, just thinking about it, lying awake at night, thinking about, you know, I got to take on Dave Brown tomorrow, you know, that's not easy.
No, and it'd be so hard, like, especially early on when you're basically getting, like, spot duty, because you're not even getting into a rhythm, right? And it's just like, I don't know, I mean, there's no denying what you're there for at that point. Like, it's not like, we're playing you every game, we'll give you a regular shift. And hey, if it happens, Jay, it happens, you know? It's like, no, we're not even playing you these couple games, but oh, yeah, we're playing you now. And I'm sure he probably didn't get a lot of ice time. And it was just against those guys.
It's funny, if you go through the article and you read some of the, like, listen to the clips and watch the video, like, you'll hear Fred Cusick make mention, like, I haven't seen Jay out there yet. Oh, Nylund's out there. Oh, there's Jay. Like, you know, he hasn't showed up until Nylund got on the ice. You know, it's one of those things. You know, so it's like you're right. He probably wasn't getting a ton of ice time either, even when he was playing. You know, he's kind of, you know, and I don't think Jay was the most gifted of you know, athletes or talents. You know, he was. I think I made mention he did have like a 2-goal game, you know, during the season. And, you know, he was kind of like one of those guys that would, you know, battle in front of the net and try to, you know, score, you know, one of those real dirty goals, you know, where you have to really battle for it. You know, he was one of those guys. He wasn't like a gifted player. And like you said, he knew what he was there for. You know, it was sort of like that role. And it was really kind of during the mid-80s, it was really kind of coming into prominence, wasn't it? Yeah. You had these guys that were coming in. It was kind of like there was, you know, like in Quebec, they had Gord Donnelly. You know, Harford the following year, they brought in Shane Chirla. You know, these guys are sort of bred to be that sort of pure designated hitter enforcer type guys. You started seeing more and more of them coming to the league right around the mid-80s.
Yep. Well, yeah, the role definitely started getting pigeonholed, right? And it was just like you're here for 4 or 5 shifts. And that's the way it's going to be. You know, up until then, like, even when you talk about the Bruins, you know, you talk, like, with Jonathan and Winsick and Secord and all, well, not Secord, I mean, Secord was a big scorer, but I mean, with Jonathan and Winsick and them, they had 20-goal years. So it wasn't like they were just fucking clowns with getting 3 shifts a game. Like,
yeah. You know, it's funny, because Cherry actually talked about that over the years. You know, he was like, you can't just treat these guys like caged animals and let them out just to fight and then send them back in. He's like, you got to reward them with ice time. Let them play. You know, even if it's the last 4 minutes of the freaking garbage game, you're winning 6-1, send them out there. Let them play. You know, let them do their thing. Let them, get out there on the ice. In his talk of, he spoke about all the work he did with Jadon Wensink, working on his positioning in front of the net, you know, and making him a better overall player, you know, and then he even got worried about Jadon Wensink becoming too good of a player for a short time there. You know, he was getting a little worried about him becoming a rusher.
Yeah.
You know, so it was funny, but I always thought that we always mentioned, like, you know, coaches who were great for tough guys, and Cherry was one of them, because he wasn't one of those, you know, get in your cage, in and out of your cage kind of coaches. He was one of those, you know, hey, that was a great fight. You know what? I'm putting you on the second line tonight. You know, I'm gonna give you more ice time. He would reward them, work with them, and then you had those other coaches who treated them like animals, like they were dogs. Like, you know, just let them off the leash every once in a while, and then right back in the cage.
Yeah. Yeah, and that'd be so hard that I couldn't imagine, you know, and you know, like, you know, they, yeah, at that point, you know, everyone knows their role, but at the end of the day, you know, they want to play a little bit too. I mean, everybody wants to play, you know, you can't just be designated meatball all the time. So it's like, yeah, like you said, in the blowout games or whatever, yeah, they're out there trying to get, you know, the pressure's off a little bit, right? And they're just out there trying to score and play hockey, right? And, you know, God damn, I do sound like Sam Rose and all of a sudden when I said that. But
you sounded a little like Derek Sanderson, too. January just wants to play hockey.
Well, yeah, there you go. I was going to say, you know, going back to the footage, it's funny, when I talk to you, it always goes back to footage for some reason. But, dude, watch, like we said with the Rangers tapes, watching some of the Bruins tape, like I was watching that Bruins DVD, that it's so hard to listen to. It's so hard. I just want to kill Sanderson. No, awful.
Yeah, it's funny because you had I always thought it was like just an odd couple pairing. You had the very venerable, you know, voice of the Boston Bruins, Fred Cusick, and then you had Derek.
Yeah. Oh.
It was just like, oh my God. The funny thing was when there would be like a play or a fight or something like that, and Derek was being all a homer, and Fred Cusick and Dave Shea would actually kind of argue with him a little bit about it. Like, well, what do you mean? He didn't even win the single clinch, Derek. You know, they kind of have a little back and forth. You know, it was funny. But yeah, that's what he was there for, to be the Jack Edwards of his day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, and like I said, with if you were a Bruins fan, it was great, right? Like, oh, these are great tapes, you know, but when you're an outsider listening to it, it's like, oh my God, you know, it's just painful to listen to, you know, I get, you know, home team, rah, rah, but I mean, holy shit, there's to a point, man, come on, you know, dial it down a little bit.
Yeah, even as a Bruins fan, I thought it was cool.
Yeah, but
I would say the same thing for like Jack Edwards. Like, you know, in the last few years before I kind of stopped watching hockey, you know, I used to hear him during a fight. I'd be like, oh, dude, he's just brutal sometimes.
Oh yeah,
some of the things he would say, like, oh, come on, you know. But I guess that's one of those, that's how I crossed the bear as Bruins fans, you know, Sanderson and Edwards.
Well, but it's almost like it's like a parody. Like, it was just like a skit. Like, there's no one, like, you can't be serious with this shit, right? Like, you gotta be fucking around. Like, I'm kind of waiting to, I'm just messing with you. You're waiting for that to happen, but it never does. You know, it's like, no, this guy's really serious about this right now. Like, all right, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's funny, too, because even as an announcer, I still think Derek, you know, is bleeding black and gold, even, you know, and he's like, you know what, the Bruins can do no wrong, I don't care.
Oh, exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's funny just kind of going through Miller's fight card. I was looking, again, a name that comes up is this fight with Dykstra. I was going
through. Did a fight from his rookie year?
Yeah. And it was, but I was just going through. I had a mixtape, and I was watching it a while back. And there's a bunch of Dykstra stuff on there. Damn. That dude wasn't bad, man. Like, at least some of the fights I was watching.
Yeah, he really didn't get like a lot of like exposure. I remember there was a poster on HockeyFights.com who used to, I want to say it was Battleship 25, who used to kind of mention Steve Dykstra. I was like, what? Are you talking about the guy that wrecked a beat up, you know, and all that, you know? But when you go back and you catch little bits of footage here and there, because there's not a ton on him.
No.
You know, but when you go back and you see somebody like, oh, you know, yeah, he actually was all right. You know, he wasn't too bad. You know, another guy you noticed too, I think his name was Paul Sear.
Yep.
Who I remember early in his career, had a couple of scrums, like, wow, this story's actually not too bad. You know, but then, you know, you really didn't see too much of him, you know, after that. Like, every so often you'll catch a guy that was briefly not bad, you know, you were kind of surprised, you know. But yeah, Dykstra might be one of those guys. I was unfortunately, whenever I get one of these projects going, I always, you know, look at what the footage I have, you know, of, you know, what I have in my collection. And I actually wound up being short a few of the fights. So I actually started reaching out, and the funny thing is I wound up landing Jay Miller fight against Gord Donnelly, his very first fight with Donnelly from the season in 85-86. I had never actually seen it before, and I actually reached out and I'm like, oh wow, I'm surprised it's not generally available. I had it on none of my Miller DVDs or anything like that, none of my Bruins DVDs or the Quebec ones. So I was like, well, maybe it's just not available. But sure enough, somebody actually sent me the footage, and that fight, the footage is pretty grainy, but that's the first fight between Miller and Donnelly. I don't think it's really like a common fight that you'll find out there, so I was actually pretty psyched to get a hold of it. That was William Chippaway over at Facebook. He actually sent me the link to the fight, so that was, you know, kind of kudos to him for that one. And that's another part of this. You know, the reason why I love these little projects is it kind of force you to look for footage, and sometimes you don't have it, and you know, you ask around, maybe you'll come across something like that. I don't know if you remember, but in the top 25 all-time project I did, on the Sandy McCarthy section, it had that second fight with Bob Probert. There was another one that wasn't really commonly available. Only the highlight news clip was available of that fight, but that was a full fight, you know, yeah. and so that was another one of the things that I really love about this is sometimes you can find some of those old, you know, maybe not rare fights or anything like that, but they're kind of low-key, floating on the radar kind of fights that not a lot of people have seen. You know, so it makes these projects a little bit more worthwhile.
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, that's rare, right? Because it's in Boston. I'm surprised that, like, it's just the footage isn't there. Readily available, I guess. Boston's always sort of been kind of a hot spot for footage anyway.
Yeah, I never came across that. And it's funny, when you watch the fight, it's easy. A lot of those Miller-Donnelly fights break down the same way, you know, very kind of enclosed, rapid fire. So it's hard to sometimes distinguish which fight is which. I always thought the first fight between Miller and Donnelly was the actual second one that's on his card, which was a two-fight game. He fought Jimmy Mann, and then he fought Donnelly in that game. I thought that was the original first fight between them, but lo and behold, you know, this footage shows up. So it's pretty neat. That's one of the big reasons why I keep doing these.
No, what do you... Yeah, well, absolutely. Just to go, Gord Donnelly. What do you think of Gord Donnelly?
I love Donnelly, especially in Quebec. He's... Like, I mean, just a rapid-fire southpaw. He had this little bit of a technique. He wasn't just, like, a stand there and slug it out. He kind of would throw, but he would also kind of step back and sort of duck a little bit and throw your rhythm off. But it was all very fast-paced. And he had some really good swing-outs during his time. And I think, briefly, you could argue Donnelly was a top-10 fighter and probably pro 87, 88, you know, with Quebec. He was a really tough guy. Even in... When he went to, you know, Buffalo, he was still a tough guy. When I think of, like, a gunslinger, I think of a guy like Donnelly. He was one of those guys that was just, you know, willing to just throw down, you know. But I really liked Donnelly.
No, absolutely. Yeah, there was another guy. I got, just going through Quebec stuff and some late 80s Winnipeg. And it was interesting because we were talking about stuff with no sound. A bunch of this Winnipeg stuff didn't have any sound. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, it was really clear at that point in the late 80s. You could tell it was... And it's NHL, right? So it's not like it's shot from the rafters. Yeah. It's, you know... So you could obviously...
You're
right, you knew it was Donnelly, but it was... It was always weird with Gord, for me, anyway. He's just one of those guys I think people just don't talk about. And all of a sudden you start watching and it's like, God damn, like, you know, this guy was pretty good, you know, and it was, you know, maybe it's because back in, you know, in the '80s, he was in Quebec and then Winnipeg, and you know, not a lot of
national. Oh yeah, if he was in Philly, he'd be a god.
well, that's what I mean.
I love right? that saying.
Yeah, well, I mean, pretty much. I mean, you know, if he had more national exposure, right? But I mean, you're in Quebec, so it's French, you know, and then you know, and then you're in Winnipeg, which. Fuck, people in Winnipeg That's don't want to be people from Winnipeg don't want to be in Winnipeg, right? So I mean, you know, I mean, so you're kind of lost there, you know. And then he goes to Buffalo, and you know, at that point, you know, he's there for a couple of years, but he was on that one year when, you know, you got May and Ray and Donnelly and Barnaby, and it's just a psycho show in Buffalo.
Yeah, he helped spice up a little bit of the Boston Buffalo rivalry in the very very late 80s. You know, it's funny too, because he was one of those guys that went over to the IHL.
Yeah.
Yep. I think he went up with Chicago briefly over there. And I just remember, you know, when I started like looking up more minor league footage, and this, you know, this is before like Drop Your Gloves or Hockey DB. Like, I didn't, you know, you're like, oh my God, he played in the IHL? Like, check him, you know, you don't realize these kinds of things. You know, it's kind of like kind of a surprise, but the IHL kind of extended the lifeline for a lot of those enforcers at that time, you know. Guys are having some issues.
Yeah, well, and then, like, you know, he's in Houston that one year. Like, I'm just looking at it. Yeah, 333 minutes with the Houston Aeros in 95, you know. So it's like,
you know,
he found the fountain of youth there for one year anyway, and it was just like, he's just going off. Because I can remember I was, you know, for a while there, like, that mid-90s IHL, there was a lot of footage out there. Because they had got the satellite deal and stuff, so there's lots of, you know, I don't want to say every team, but I mean, there was a lot of mixed IHL DVDs going around at that in the mid '90s time, and I have a bunch of them. But I can remember when I first got them, and you start and you're watching it because IHL, this is going to be great. You put it in, and it's like Gord Donnelly. You're kind of like, I remember that guy from the '80s, you know, and it's like.
Yeah.
But because you always kind of view,
yeah, like, what?
Yeah, well, you just kind of look at him as like
another
one
over there.
Yeah, it's like an '80s guy, right? And this is like 1995, but yeah, he could still go for sure. But it's just funny you bring up Donnelly, and it's just I think he sort of just gets forgotten about.
He does. He had some, you know, really good. I loved his style too, because he's a very offensive style fighter. Like, he was, you know, really willing to swing out with you, and he had a couple of. Really good toe-to-toe fights with John Kordick when, you know, Kordick was one of those guys that didn't lose very often. And I, you know, Donnelly looked like he edged him out. One of them was just a little bit faster than him in that fight.
Yeah.
And then there was that great slugfest with Craig Berube.
Yep.
I don't know if you've had a chance to see that. I'm not sure if that was from the 86-87 season, but oh, what a swing out that was. Just seeing those two guys going rapid fire, righty against lefty, which is always a treat.
Yeah, so, yeah, Donnelly and Berube. And, yeah, no, it was like,
yeah,
I said. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that, you know, that we don't really think about it too much, you know, because it probably didn't have the standout brawls of, like, you know, the Miller-Kordick or the Miller-Brown series. But Miller and Donnelly fought each other a ton.
Yeah.
You know, just in a short amount of time. And, you know, I'll say that much about Miller. He was, you know, not shy about going after the guy's big gun over and over and over again. It didn't matter who it was, big or small, you know, so it didn't surprise me. You know, they didn't really seem to have like a, you know, you could feel there was some hatred in, you know, the Miller-Nylund fights and even the Kordick fights, you know, and there was, you know, some heat to the Brown battles, you know, but I never really got that with the Donnelly fights, so much, you know. I don't know if they were familiar with each other from, you know, the AHL or anything like that, But yeah, they had a pretty long rivalry, and these are the first early fights of that rivalry.
No, absolutely, yeah, and well, a name you brought up in his rookie year, and to be completely honest, I mean, I know who he is and everything else, but I don't know much about him as Jimmy Mann, and I know other than you know, he was a high pick and stuff, but I mean, in terms of my Jimmy Mann. Knowledge, it's very limited. What are your feelings on Jimmy Mann?
Well, Jimmy Mann was, you know, he was John Ferguson's number one pick, you know, the Jets' first pick in the NHL. And I think Ferguson thought he would be like kind of like him, like, you know, score a lot, fight a lot. But, you know, he did a lot of fighting. You know, the scoring, it just wasn't there, you know. But he was a little bit different, too, because, you know, he could be very cheap. You know, there was the famous Gardner incident, you know, where he broke, you know, kind of blindside, broke this guy's jaw, you know, and, you know, he had a kind of a style where he would try to kind of get the jump on you. You know, he was a lefty, you know, as well. You know, there's not a lot of footage from his early years, but he actually, you know, wound up breaking Playfair's nose in a fight. And I think the style with Jimmy Mann was, he was a southpaw, and if he, you know, squared off with him, he would try to go for the big shot right away. You know, the big power punch, you know, big left or a couple series of lefts, and then go to, you know, wrestling, you know, immediately after. That was sort of like his style. But there's just not a lot of footage from that first year or two. He kind of exploded into the fight scene at first. You know, he seemed to be fighting everybody. And, of course, he had that fight with Playfair that sort of made a lot of people aware of him. You know, a Playfair would eventually get him back. You know, but for a few years with Winnipeg, he was sort of a legit fighter, you know, but there was also that real, I don't know, like sort of like a mugging quality to his style of fighting. And in that first fight with Jay Miller, and, you know, this is obviously after his time in Quebec, in Winnipeg, you know, he's now playing with Quebec, and he would still fight, but I don't think he was really the sort of go-to heavyweight like he was in Winnipeg. But his style, you could see, you know, sort of turns and, you know, tries to jump Miller, and Miller sort of turns the tables on him in that fight, you know. But yeah, he had a few decent years as a fighter in Winnipeg early in his career, and then he sort of faded after that because, you know, he did a lot of the cheap stuff like I mentioned, you know, and you know, just over time he became, you know, less of a force, so to speak, as like a top fighter in the league. He was still a willing guy, but, you know, after those first couple years in Winnipeg, he was, you know, really didn't really have the reputation, you know, he had early on.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'm just looking at his DB, and it's like, you know, he obviously had a lot of injuries. Because it's like, you know, 37 games, 40 games, 22 games, 25 games, 35 games. Like, really, the only full season he played was that rookie year with Winnipeg. 72 games, 287 yeah. minutes. I mean, other than that, it's like half seasons, quarter seasons. So, I mean, you know, and not a lot of penalty minutes, you know.
Yeah, some suspensions in there, too, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You know, I know you got hammered a couple times with suspensions, but, I mean, you're right. I don't think he actually, you know, blossomed into the kind of player that they thought he was going to become, you know, such a high draft pick and everything like that. So it kind of, you know, you kind of get that negative press for that, too, you know what I mean?
And, yeah, well, that was the thing in junior. Yeah, back-to-back 80-point seasons. So, I mean, you know, he had the skill in juniors for sure, you know, in 270 minutes, 260 minutes, you know. So, you know, definitely a power forward in junior. So, I mean, with those numbers, I could see the draft, like, why he went in the first round. But, you know, yeah, obviously never blossomed scoring-wise. But, yeah. But, yeah, it was interesting because, yeah, I watched the video there of him kind of getting the jump on Miller and stuff, and it was, and you had mentioned in the article how it's sort of like, you know, oh, typical Jimmy, you know, kind of thing, and it's like...
Yeah, that was kind of, yeah, there was always something with him, and I thought that there's certain guys that, you know, and that's a good, I guess a good thing about hockey fighting is there's all, you know, different styles and techniques. It's not just two wild men throwing wildly, you know, it's, you know, a lot of times there's a sort of purpose to what some of these guys are doing, and certain guys, as we have seen, because of the rules, you know, they were able to kind of get the jump in fights. And they were able to sort of kind of get that muggy head start, you know. Some of the more famous practitioners would be guys like Dave Brown or Wendell Clark, you know. But those guys had much more substance, I thought, than Jimmy Mann. You know, Jimmy seemed to kind of go for like the opportunistic, you know, quick, you know, power shot, you know, and try to do you away quickly or, you know, something like that. Or just flat out kind of get the jump on you, you know, like that seemed to be kind of his style. And by the time he was playing with Quebec, he had really slowed down, and, you know, his fights were sort of like lacking in like quality. They weren't, you know, big barn burners. So you kind of forget about him when he went to Quebec.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was just an interesting name coming up. And, I had realized after reading the article, it's like, yeah, I mean, I haven't really, you know, I've never sought out to see his footage or, you know, or anything like that. But I remember just the brief stuff I have seen. It was just, you know, really wasn't much there. And it was kind of interesting to read your thoughts on it. But one guy I'm a big fan of that Jay actually had a very, you know, the fight was good up until the end when he kind of got obviously dropped him a little bit, was Craig Cox. I love Craig Cox. He's like one of my favorite guys. I mean, just all or nothing, you know, just give her shit. And I mean, you know, took some lumpings, but whatever. He was always around. He was always in it. But it was interesting. The video that you put up of the Cox fight, I have that same fight on my YouTube channel, but I have it just right off the draw, you know, where Cox drops his stuff before they drop. That's the only, I'd only seen it from then. You put the whole thing on when there was the scrum. Nobody gets penalties. They all stay out on the ice and the whole buildup. I'd never seen that part before.
Yeah, you could see that Cox was sort of chomping at the bit in that game. And, you know, that was, you know, it's funny because earlier in the year he had that war with Probert, you know, and I think he had this sort of reputation as kind of like a, you know, like a wild gunslinger, you know, like here's a California kid, you know, rolling through town. And you could see that he was like sort of like looking for something. And I always love the sort of matchups you get with certain fighters. And like with Jay Miller taking on Craig Cox, you literally had a polished technical style in close type of fighter, like Jay Miller against, you know, wide open, you know, all out brawler like Craig Cox. So like they just sort of stand back and fire away. And it's interesting seeing Miller sort of impose his style on Cox in that fight because, you know, against Miller, you weren't going to get that sort of at arm's length, you know, swing out. It just never really happened with him. He always sort of would kind of creep up sort of in tight, not hugging, but he was always very much, you know, sort of in your face, in your chest, and he'd have that hold on the back of your collar, you know, that's how he liked the fight, kind of in tight. He liked his exchanges sort of in tight where he can manage them. He didn't, you know, like the Probert or Cox, you know, stand back and just brawl. So it was interesting seeing, you know, basically Cox struggle with Miller, you know, with that sort of in close quarters fighting. And then, you know, Miller, you know, nails him with a good shot at the end.
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was, like I said, it was interesting to see the whole video and how it all developed. And
but I agree with you too. I loved Cox. He was one of those guys that, like, my earliest fight footage, you know, was of these old grainy tapes and seeing, you know, Vancouver footage with, you know, no audio and just, you know, Craig Cox brawling out with guys. And, you know, it was, you know, even at that age, I knew, I was aware of, you know, Craig Cox and kind of who he was and what he was about. And he was still very young in his career at that time too.
Yeah.
But very interesting mashup of styles.
Yeah, no. And it was interesting. And with Cox, and of course, you know, comes to, you know, basically became famous because of the Probert fight and being on Rock'em Sock'em and Don Cherry talking about him on Coach's Corner and, you know, being on the videotapes. I mean, you know, Craig Cox, you know, but, later on, as you got into the, you know, the fight tape hobby and stuff, you know, the Cox footage from the American League with the Express shows up, and he had those great fights with Bennett Wolf.
Oh yeah, yeah. And Bennett Wolf's another one of those guys too. You know, much bigger guy, but another guy that just like to sort of stand back and just fire kind of savagely, you know, in a fight, which is more kind of in line with what Cox likes to do. He likes to just sort of swing it out. And he might be the most reckless fighter I've ever come across. He would, like, lose his grip completely in a fight while swinging away, you know, and still try to slug it out. Like, you know, there's something else. Boy, the balls on that guy.
Oh, yeah, and there was no, like, oh, I lost my grip. Okay, time to bail. Like, that shit wasn't happening.
No.
It was like, I'm just going to keep coming and, you know, whatever. And, I mean, that's the thing. You watch some of the Cox fights that are out there, and I think people that, on the surface, they're kind of like, oh, he's kind of a punching bag. It's like, you know, not, you know, his style would sort of lend to that. I don't ever want to call him that because it's so disrespectful, but it's like,
but yeah, I never looked at him like that. He had a very high risk, high reward style. Yes. You know, there was a lot of guys that were like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it was wide open and, you know, whatever and give her shit. Right. But I mean, oh yeah. I always tell everybody, you put a Craig Cox DVD in, you'll be fucking entertained for an hour without a doubt. He was awesome.
Oh yeah. Right. And absolutely. Just like a warrior.
Oh, and there's that great stuff on YouTube where someone's interviewing him later on in life, and he's sitting in his office at the rink, leaning back in his chair, and they're like 3 or 4 minute clips of him talking about Coaster, Bennett Dave Wolf,
Brown fight,
yeah, the Brown fight.
You're right.
And I'm like, God, who? Like, I always wanted to get a hold of the guy and like Can you put the whole interview up? Don't just chop it up into a couple. Yeah. I'm like, put the whole interview.
He was over at HockeyFights.com. I forget exactly who that was at the time, but I remember when it first came out, and I was like, oh wow, that's awesome, because you know this person I didn't really realize was into that kind of thing, like you know, but you know, like you said, it wasn't the full interview like you wanted. It was just sort of like sections of it, you know. But still cool nonetheless.
Oh yeah, it was great, and it's funny because it was so. Like, that was, like, pre-podcasting days, like, that video, right? Like, so to get, like, an old-timer guy talking about, like, all the fights we watched on video, to hear him, like, it's one thing, oh, I ran into so-and-so at the fucking McDonald's one day, and I asked him, hey, back in the day when you fought Cochran, and this is what he said, you know, you'd have those kind of stories. Yeah. But, I mean, this was the first time, like, that I can remember anyway, like, on video, like where it was a fan doing it. It wasn't just staged TSN or ESPN interview where they talk about so back when you played, but you know, Bob Costas wasn't going to start asking him about Bennett Wolf, right? You know what I mean? So it was like,
yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It was like the first kind of fan interview, like a fight fan interviewing him. And it was like, and it was so cool. And I'm like, actually, as I'm saying is now, it's like, I know he runs a rink in Minnesota somewhere. I'm like, son of a bitch. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I should try to get a hold of him, see if he want to come on the podcast. He'd be a great guest.
Oh my God. Yeah. The stories he must have. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah. And like, just even if they're like half as good as that videotape, right? I'd love to take a deep dive, you know, cause he's like come up from California, played in the Ontario Hockey League in the early 80s and just be fighting everybody. And then, oh yeah. I think he'd be
gunslinging.
Oh yeah, he'd be a great interview. But yeah, just kind of going on with the who are we talking about again? Oh yeah, Jay Miller. So kind of as the season goes on and wraps up, like you said, he kind of gets involved with Nyland, then it's Kordick, and I mean, how many times did he fight Kordick? What was the final total on that? God. Is it 8?
Oh, I think. Something like that, yeah, or 6 or something like that. That was a great series, even though Kordick sort of had the edge in that whole series. But he kind of like went from the Nyland rivalry right to like a Kordick rivalry, and that's what I loved about Miller. Is even when McGuire went over to Buffalo, Kevin McGuire, I mean, he must have fought him like, you know, 8 times in 2 seasons. It was, you know, he really got himself involved in those rivalries. That's what I loved about Miller. You know, it's like. You know, he was like fighting for us. You know, he wore that sweater with that extra little bit of pride, you know, being a local lad himself, you know. So, you know, those rivalries are all the more intense because of it.
Yeah, just kind of with Miller, it's like, so he plays the 4 or 5 years in Boston, then he goes to L.A. And, what happened? Like, all of a sudden, he's just gone out of the league. Like, he played how many games, 60-some games, had 270, like, he was active, and then I heard he got some virus, they didn't know what it was, and he was losing weight, and then all of a sudden he was just gone out of hockey. And I never did follow up. Do you know why he retired?
I don't know if it was specifically why, but I thought I read that he had Lyme disease, and he wound up losing, like, a ton of weight, you know, because of it, and he tried to give it one more go. I believe he played, like, the preseason. Maybe, I'm going to guess, I don't have drop your gloves anymore, but I'm going to say it was like maybe the 92-93 season. I think he fought Jay Wells in the preseason, And that was kind of like it for him after that. I don't think, you know, maybe he realized he just couldn't do it no more, or, you know, he didn't have the strength anymore. I'm not really sure, but I've never really got nailed down why, you know, that was the end for him. But you're right. He did kind of go in. It's funny. Out in Boston, he was the top dog. You know, I mean, even though they had guys like Lyndon Byers around that, you know, that could help out, and they even brought in Bruce Shoebottom briefly to help out and everything like that. But, you know, he was sort of the number one guy over in L.A. You know, he was sort of playing second fiddle to Marty McSorley. And he was the guy riding shotgun at that point out in L.A., you know. And I always thought that, you know, sort of not being in Boston anymore and maybe fighting with that extra bit of passion, you know, for the sweater. And it was a sort of different scene for him out in L.A., you know. So that was sort of, you know, when we used to break down our little top 10 lists, you know, when he was in Boston, he was a top 10 fighter. You know, but out in L.A., he faded right out.
Yeah, like it's, like he was still active. But
he was, yeah.
But it was just, yeah. No, you're right. There was sort of, as you're saying that, and I'm thinking of the footage. Yeah, he seemed to be more, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know. I mean, because he'd still fight in L.A. and everything, but there was something about him in Boston.
Yeah, he was more of a...
He was
in Boston, he was the number one guy, but out in L.A., it was like he was taking on Ronnie Stern three or four times in a season, as opposed to taking on Tim Hunter three or four times, or, you know, somebody like that. Like, you know, he was sort of... Marty was the guy taking on the big guns out there, you know, so to speak, and Jay was sort of like, all right, well, I'll look at Ronnie Stern, you know, if you're going to take on their top heavyweight, you know, and it's kind of weird seeing him in that position. You know, although he still had some great fights. I don't know if you remember him taking on a young Darren Kimball when he was with L.A., and that was a great fight. What a toe-to-toe battle. And usually, it's funny because Jay usually didn't get sucked into a lot of those style of fights. Like, he would exchange with you when he felt like he can get away with it. But in general, he was taking that whole rapid-fire style away from you, you know, with a lot of that inside grappling and everything like that. But very good fight, seeing him exchange like that. That was a good one.
It was. Well, that's funny. You mentioned the guy's name before, but that similar fight happened with McGuire, too. It was a rare kind of, for Miller, it was a rare kind of...
Yeah, I believe I know the fight you're talking about, too, a playoff fight after McGuire clotheslined Jay Miller.
Yeah.
Now, they dropped the gloves, and they came together. It was a really good toe-to-toe, you know, slug out, right? You know, both of them just eat and punch it simultaneously. And like you said, Miller usually didn't really, he would do that in like little exchanges, but he might have been a little extra pissed off that night.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, it was rare. And yeah, to go back, I think in Boston, he always seemed, he seemed more angry in Boston than he did in L.A. That makes any
sense. Yeah, I really think he fed off the crowd. Like, you know, like, especially in home games and everything like that. Like, I'm telling you, like, he felt something a little bit more, you know, playing in Boston. You can just see it in those long, drawn-out battles with John Cordick. You can see him digging deep for that something extra.
Yeah.
You didn't really see that so much in L.A. You know, maybe it was just, you know, where it was sort of away from the East Coast, and maybe, you know, all eyes weren't, you know, on that, those, like, really pumped up rivalries like they had in Montreal and Buffalo at the time. You know, maybe it was a little bit more relaxed. I mean, I can't really say, but, you know, it just seemed like he didn't have that same intensity, you know, himself, like he had in Boston. You know, Boston, he was just front and center, you know, and in L.A. it was kind of like, all right, you know, Marty's sort of the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's the story of Jay Miller. It was, like I said, it was just a really interesting article that it was, you know, you get these moments in time from year to year or whatever, and the kind of the story involved in that year around certain teams, you know, and it was, you know, with the whole Nylund thing and then bringing Jay up, and it was just a really interesting piece. Yeah, in terms of, like we were kind of talking about before, with your quote unquote legends in black and white. Is there anything you're kind of looking for? Like, what are your pieces you're working on right now? I know you're always kind of got something in the mix. Do you have any? No, go ahead.
Well, I do have one I'm working on. Like I was you know, hopefully going to be something of a collaboration. I got something like that on the back burners, you know, regarding Tony Twist and Sandy McCarthy, who was the champ, you know, at that time, that old age-old battle.
Yeah.
So that was one thing I was, you know, going to be working on, you know, but right now I was just glad to take care of this Miller one, because I'd been sitting on it and I had some trouble with the site, and, you know, really, really happy to finally get this going. And now that my issues on the site are taken care of, I feel like much more confident that I can, you know, just sort of like seamlessly, you know, just keep going. It's so frustrating because you're not only are you writing a piece, but you're also writing pictures and you're making video clips and you're uploading them to YouTube, and you know, you're trying to embed everything all at once, and you hope everything works out. And sometimes technology doesn't want to work with you, you know, it wants to work against you. So it kind of like kills your confidence sometimes. Like, oh, I want to do this, like the top 25 all time list. I want to continue to add on to that. But I'm like, oh, geez, every one of these things has so much video, and I'm having such a problem, you know, in the YouTube video right now. So that, you know, it just kind of kills your confidence and your creativity. But, you know, we're back on track now. So, you know, I'm kind of open to suggestion, too. So that's another thing. That's another good thing, being my own boss. You know, I can kind of pick and choose what I want to do.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad you're back doing it. You know, it's you know, yeah, technology. All right, folks, we're back. The irony of it, just as Steve and I were talking about computer issues, I don't know what the hell happened. Skype went down or something, and he could hear me, and I couldn't hear him. And 10 minutes of restarting computers and unplugging and plugging in and banging my mouse, because I think that works, doesn't it? Isn't that what the Job Squad would do, bang on your mouse? I'm such a computer computer genius over here. But we're back at it. I can't remember where we were now. Damn it. No, just in terms of the legends in black and white, and I was gonna say, you had mentioned briefly there about kind of looking into the Twist McCarthy era. I think that's one. I mean, everybody knows about Twister, but I think that's one guy that I think a lot of people sort of sleep on is Sandy McCarthy.
I mean, I don't know if I've become one of his biggest boosters, but to me, he's an all-time guy. Just that run in Calgary alone was fantastic. You know, storming into the league in 93-94 and theoretically, you know, taking the belt from Probert, you know, and beating him at the end of the season. And, you know, that was, you know, kind of huge. And you almost got this vibe like, oh, there's going to be another, you know, Probert rivalry here in the makings. But it didn't wind up really happening like that, you know. Probert missed the entire, you know, next season. And, you know, by this point, when he came back, he was with Chicago and things were a little bit different. The heavyweight picture had changed a little bit, didn't it? You know, I think at that point, Tony Twist was on the rise. Sandy McCarthy had already established himself. You know, Dave Brown was already just about done at that point, you know, and it was sort of like a whole new, you know, whole new, you know, era was sort of taking place. Chris Simon was another guy marching up the heavyweight ranks, you know, so it was a very interesting transitional phase and something I'm going to be looking into.
Yeah, and I think that, and that's the one thing with Sandy. I think a lot of people just see the Ranger Bruin stuff of him, and they
yeah, because his fall was pretty precipitous. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, where he just sort of like faded out. You know, he's, you know, was sort of a shadow of his former self by the time, you know, he was in Boston. You know, and you know, I'm not exactly 100% sure why that was. You know, why he has such a dramatic drop off, you know, towards the end of his career. But we've seen that before with certain fighters. You know, some guys, they, you know, they go out after a couple big losses. You know, or, you know, they have a couple rough, you know, years at the end of their career. And, you know, sadly, McCarthy is sort of like one of those guys that he just sort of, you know, he kind of came in like a lion and went out like a lamb.
Yep. Yeah, but like you said, that early, those first bunch of years in Calgary and in Tampa, oof. I encourage people to go back and check out the Sandy McCarthy from that era. Definitely.
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, I think it's funny because I know Twist got a lot of recognition, and deservedly so, you know, around, you know, the mid 90s, you know, he, when he went back to St. Louis, he was a, he became, you know, a total force to be reckoned with, you know, the most dangerous, you know, power puncher in the game. You know, this guy kind of had like frightening, you know, sort of like mauling capability. And, you know, then you had sort of McCarthy, who was a little bit different. I mean, he was a little bit bigger, but he was much more of a, like a brawling toe-to-toe kind of guy. And, you know, so it was, you know, sort of interesting how things went at that time, because McCarthy sort of got to Probert first, you know, and, you know, I think a lot of people sort of looked at him as sort of the new champ, so to speak, you know, and he sort of rolled right along, right through those sort of prime Twist years, you know, where, you know, Twist was sort of like a wrecking machine in that second half of the 1990s, you know, and McCarthy was, you know, sort of right there. I never really saw too much that made me think like, oh, well, you know, Twist is head and shoulders better, you know, he's the man, you know. So it was sort of interesting. I remember, you know, talk about Twist being the champ around this time, and, you know, but there was always Sandy McCarthy, I think, that sort of, you know, would keep, have people sort of second guessing that notion, you know, because he was so awesome, you know, with Calgary, and it, basically that same time frame.
No, absolutely. No, and, yeah, I mean, it was, Sandy was good, man, definitely, and, well, on the, so, well, I'm glad to hear that you've kind of, you know, cleared up your website issues, and, you know, you can get back at her. I mean, for the people listening out there, it's when ProbertWasKing.com. I keep telling you, man, you gotta come out with merchandise, because you got, like, the best name going.
Yeah, maybe one of these days. I don't know. I think the Probert estate might have some issues with some gear coming out with Probert's name on it or anything like that. But I don't know. We'll see what happens down the line. I'm lucky I can get the next piece out within the next 2 months, let alone get gear, you know.
Well, and I know some of the articles that you've been on there, I mean, you've broken down certain fights, like the Friedrich and Vandenbusch and Probert and McSorley and that type of thing, and was your one article, Hockey's Greatest Fighters? Yeah, that one, and that was sort of, that was the monumental piece, obviously, in the, you know, the top 25 there. Of course, like I said, I think, I don't know, it was episode 3 or 4 on this show where I had you on, and we broke it all down. Again, for listeners out there, I'd recommend going back and definitely checking out that episode if you want some old school fight talk. That is definitely the episode for that.
You know, it's funny because I've actually, you know, over the like last year or so, I've like expanded into the whole Facebook side of things, you know, because I was never really active on it before, but I've had people actually reach out to me and mention that episode. Like, hey, were you the one that did the, you know, episode with Fourth Line Voice about the top 25? And I'm like, yeah, that was me. You know, it's actually funny that people ever, you know, seem to recognize that one, you know, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. No, it's, I know it got a lot of listens, and, I'm still like, I'm like you with the old, like, I guess it's because of our age and stuff like that. I mean, as we've kind of entered into this new frontier of, I still sometimes can't wrap my head around the whole internet thing. Like, it's like I'm doing a podcast, but I don't know. It's weird. I always just sort of think I'm talking to myself. So all of a sudden, when you get feedback from people and they're like all over the world, I'm not trying to sound like, oh, I got thousands listening or anything, but it's but you know what I'm saying? You just, you realize how small the world has become with social media.
You're right. Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. You
know? Well, and it's just like, even back when we first got on the internet, and like, well, when I first interacted with you would have been on the message boards. So, like, I always tell everybody, yeah, like, with when I have older guests on, older, like, we're fucking seniors, but, I mean, you and I, or, like, Joe Lazito, or guys like that, or Dave, History Hockey Fights, I mean, when I have you guys on, and we're talking, and I think for the younger listeners that they grew up with the internet, they don't know any different, they grew up with the internet. For us, this was, like, a big deal to stumble onto a fight message board and realize that there's other psychos other than yourself that like hockey fights, you know,
you're right.
And all of a sudden I can trade tapes with these people. Oh, they own tapes too. I thought I was the only one. For some reason you thought you were the only one. And so all of a sudden you start trading with people, and it's like,
at that point, you realize how small the world is becoming. When, well, like we were just, I mentioned his name at the start, and I know he listens to the show Zoltan out there, you know, here I'm checking, trading with a guy in like, what, Russia, you know, and stuff like that, or yeah, Slovakia. Yeah. And it's like, you know, Jay in Finland. You know, I'm getting newspaper articles about the Regina Pats from a guy in Finland. Like, really? Like, it's just, it's bizarre, man.
It is, yeah. No, and you, it's funny because I remember when the switchover happened from, you know, when you went from like the VHS days to the DVD days, and you finally made that commitment, like, all right, I'm gonna do this. You know, I don't know if this DVD thing is gonna last, but everyone seems to be on it right now, so I'm gonna do it. You know, and some of the earliest DVD traders that I actually encountered that would, you know, like, hey, yeah, I'll trade with you as my list. They'd be from Russia.
Yeah.
You know, you had a lot of guys that were out there. They loved the fight game, and they were out in Russia doing their things. A lot of those guys wind up migrating over to, like, Drop Your Gloves and stuff like that. So you'd run into them over there, too. But it was pretty funny. It is interesting how things have changed over the years. But, yeah, such, you know, it is a small world nowadays.
Yeah, no, and I always say, like, and doing this podcast, I mean, that's been the real fun part. You know, as frustrating as the process could be, like, frustrating like it was 10 minutes ago as I was trying to get this damn thing to work again. Why is it not working? Besides, you know, when you get into it and you do episodes and you get feedback from people, and it's like, yeah, like you said, it's so you get a guy from Europe that, oh, I listened to every episode. It's like, really? Like, why? You know, it's like, okay. I'm like, but it just seems so, it's just so bizarre and really humbling, actually. And it's really cool, but it's cool to think, like, I enjoy having guys like yourself on that have the knowledge to, you know, you to give you guys the platform and to present it for people, well, around the world. To listen to, like, there's dudes in Russia or Finland or in Manchester listening to us talk about Jay Miller for the last hour and a half, and it's just so bizarre to say that, but it's
it's awesome.
Yeah, so like and you forget until all of a sudden you get, like you just said, you get feedback about that, and it's like you know, oh yeah, I was listening to the show. You're, you know, oh, you were the one, you know, okay, you know, but, but yeah, you just sort of, I don't know. It's just weird as you forget sometimes that the power of social media and the reach around the world that you have now with this stuff. And so it, and I mean, I've seen people commenting on your, when you posted, well, just even this last article. You know, try to get traction with the retweets and everything else, and you see the feedback it gets. Stuff like that's really rewarding.
Oh, it is, yeah. And it's like a lot of times I like what you said. It's not a lot of us that are like really into this whole hobby and collecting, you know, DVDs and footage and breaking it down, and then you know, going on like Twitter or Facebook and discussing it with other people who are into it as well. And you know, and you know, when they turn around and, like I was telling you, you know, someone was like, "Oh, that, you know, that top 25." And not only did he say he liked the top 25 episode, but he said, "Well, I'd have this one higher, and I'd put this one in this spot." And you know, it kind of generates its own discussion, which is, you know, also really cool too. And it's, you know, just like I've said to you so many times, it just kind of keeps the discussion going about these great tough guys and these great fights that have gone on throughout the years. And it's cool that we're still talking about it and the hobby's still sort of like evolving. We went from, you know, the Aggressive Hockey Report magazines to having podcasts now. It's, you know, that are sort of dedicated to it, and you know, people writing, you know, stories on the internet about these fights. You know, it's good to see things are still moving along and it hasn't died out yet, you know, like it has basically in the NHL.
Yeah, and it's you know, and like you say, it's sort of bittersweet, right? With the message boards going down and all that kind of history went away. That was really shitty, you know. So it's like, you know, anytime you can you know, with the Twitter's one thing, or and Facebook, you know, those are good. But I think when guys like you were, I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm glad you're back writing and your site's working again, because I think you know, in terms of the hobby or keeping it alive, so to speak, with air quotes, you need guys like yourself doing that. And so I'm definitely glad that you're back at it, for sure. And you know, and you know, and you'll come on the show every once in a while, and we'll talk some old school. And I just like sitting there listening to you break down stuff, because it's like, I have, you know, for all the footage and everything that I've watched and all that stuff, it's like, I don't know, get talking with you and holy shit, you start breaking down dates and sort of runs that certain guys had, and it's like, I never realized it at the time, but it's like, so that's why I'm really pumped that you're still writing and shit and staying involved anyway, despite a busy schedule.
Oh yeah, thanks, man. I appreciate the kind words, brother. And you know, it's just awesome, like, to be able to do something like this, and then, you know, have someone like yourself, you know, have us come on the show. And you know, even with like John with the Hockey Fight League, you know, you know, you'll have him on there, and you know, you'll have him discuss the breakdowns for the leagues and all the different teams, and you know, and that's just like I look at that as just like another like extension of the hobby, and you know, and you have guys like me and John come on the show and just talk about our thing, our little niche in the hobby, and you know, it's really awesome, you know. You know, for you to have us come out there, and you know, just it just helps everything go along. Like, we're all sort of pulling together for each other and everything like that. And you know, I really appreciate it, though. Thanks a lot, man.
No, absolutely. And like I said, I you know, with Twitter and everything, it's like, you know, as much, well, every episode I'm on here ranting and shitting all over Twitter and yelling how much I hate social media. But and there's a lot to hate about it. But at the same time, a lot of people on my, you know, that I follow and are on my timeline, we have kind of talked it. There is sort of a fight community that we've kind of built on Twitter, you know, and it's, you know, a solid, you know, 30, 35, 40 people that are always, you know, around with the articles or a fight clip or what have you. And, you know, and then of course, Alex starting up the Facebook, I think Alex starting up that Facebook page is pretty huge too. The Enforcer Appreciation page. Now, as much as there's a lot of new school stuff on there, and I mean, every third guy that joins, hey, has anybody ever seen Probert Cox? You know, yeah, we've seen it. You know, you know, Tasker Sen. Yeah, I know, buddy. You're not breaking new ground here, but you know, but for every one of that, there's you know, Brian Kurzman putting up an old AHL picture of Shane Churlin Binghamton or something, you know what I mean? And it's like,
so yeah,
you know, you see shit like that, or, you know, like I said, Jade Finland putting up old articles, and, you know, so as much as all of a sudden you start kind of thinking it's all over, you know, you kind of, oh man, all of a sudden something sparks your interest again, you know, some new piece of, a new picture that you've never seen, or a new piece of video, or an old newspaper article sparks the fire again. You know, so you're right. I'm glad it's not as like it once was, but we're clinging on anyway. There's still a few things around.
That's right, baby. Yeah, they'll never get rid of us.
No, exactly. I mean, they'll yeah, exactly. I mean, it's you know, and like I said, I guess with the podcast and just Twitter in general, and like I was saying to Alec the other day, I said, as much as I hate Twitter and stuff, it's like, these are the only people I could talk fights with anymore.
You're you know, right.
Like, I can't go out in the living room and ask my wife her thoughts on Craig Cox, you know? So, you know, it's like, you know, that's kind of my only outlet is to talk about this stuff anymore, you know, and, is with, strangers on Twitter. I don't know what that says about me, but whatever, you know, it's a hobby. I used to,
you're right about that, though. I'm the sort of the same way. Like, when I go to work and I talk to the guys, I can't talk to them about Dave Brown taking on Jay Wells three times in one game. They look at me like, "What are you talking about? Like, who's Dave Brown?"
Yeah,
you know, they don't. It's just, you know, they're sports fans, but they never really delved into hockey fighting like this or anything like that. You know, the other day, Kevin Miller fought the kid Miles for the Senators, and I went into a whole history of Kevin Miller. They're looking at me like, Jesus Christ. You know, like, you know too much about this stuff for your own good.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, but like so you plug into Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, you have a sort of, like, community of people that are sort of like-minded that do the same thing. Thank God.
Yeah, well, exactly. Like, if I go and forget, yeah, if I walk into the shop tomorrow and start talking about Bennett Wolf, I mean, though, who's that? Is that the new grader driver? Who's Bennett Wolf? You know, like, you know, who are we talking about? Is that the new supervisor we got? Like, no, you know. But I mean, if I say Bennett Wolf on Twitter, I'll get a few replies anyway. So it's like,
oh yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's like you have that. You know, we all go to work and slug away and, you know, do our normal life thing. But it's a nice escape still to come on and, you know, at least interact with some like-minded psychos. It's like discovering fried chicken for the first time back in, like, 1997. It's like, all right. You know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, too, because there are, or there were anyways, but, you know, it's talking about Bennett Wolf. There was a poster over at HockeyFights.com whose name was Bennett Wolf. Like, yes. That was his handle. And he was a real knowledgeable guy who used to live around the Baltimore area and used to go to some of those Skipjacks games. So he would have a lot of background info on, you know, on certain fights, you know, and he knew a lot about Bennett Wolf from those AHL days that normal guys just wouldn't know about, you know, and which was also another reason why it was great that there was a sort of extended community, like, you know, people grew up in Rochester and know all about the Americans and all those AHL teams when Val James played and, you know, like, it's sort of regional, like, you know, like yourself, you know, being out in Saskatchewan, you know, you would know a lot more about the juniors teams out there than, you know, your average everyday fight fan, you know, and that's one of the things I always loved about the community. There was all these little experts in different fields of the whole hockey fight universe, you know, so that's one of the things I really loved about it. You know, some guys was like a big Ranger historian, you know, and then there was another guy that was a big Probert guy, you know, and
yeah,
you know, they all had those little tidbits of info that nobody else really knew of. So it was pretty cool. And there's still some semblance of that. You know, that's the good thing.
No, absolutely. And like you said, you could go on the message board and, yeah, there's the guy in Rochester. So he's going to start, you know, telling you about Andy Risto, you know, or stuff like that. Or,
or
it'd be funny. Somebody be, oh, fucking Van Dorp. What a punching bag. Yeah, fuck this, that. And the guy would be, hold on. I watched him in Rochester, you know, and it was like, and you'd get a whole different perspective on Van Dorp, right? Because the dude, like, threw down hard in the American League, right?
You know, it's changes.
And I mean, people just think of the Byers fight. No, he was a goof. Well, it's like, no, he wasn't, you know, and it's like, you know, and the same thing, you know, you talk about, like, with Bennett Wolf and stuff like that, with the Baltimore footage and Val James and stuff like that. So yeah, you'd have your different your folks in different areas that could talk on that stuff.
Oh, definitely. I remember there was certain guys, even NHL stuff, you know, like there's a lot of teams that had, you know, even though they're NHL teams, when, you know, coming along, like, you know, there's a lot of missing early Pittsburgh Penguins footage that's just gone. There's huge gaps in old Vancouver Canucks footage, you know, LA Kings. You have sections where we don't really know what happened. And then you get people that would just sign up for these, you know, like HockeyFights.com or Fried Chickens, and, you know, they would get on the site and they're like, hey, you know, I lived in LA at the time. You know, I was there for that fight. I was there for that bench clearing brawl. I saw what happened. Or, you know, they could give you all kinds of feedback that you otherwise would have no idea about.
Oh, yeah. And, like, even just, like, in simple things, like, oh, preseason games. Oh, yeah, I remember, yeah, it was, like, some minor league guy that you didn't, like, it wasn't even on Drop Your Gloves, you know, and it was, like, well, it's funny, like, even talking, doing this podcast, you talk to certain players, and they're like, oh, yeah, I was in Pittsburgh camp. It's like, what? You were? Oh, yeah, no, I got into a fight with so-and-so, and it's like, okay. It's like, it's not listed anywhere. It's like, and you don't know any of this stuff, right? But it's like, some guy on a message board or something would post it, and like, what was it the other day? I mean people probably knew. What was Byers? We were talking about Lyndon Byers, and then all of a sudden somebody was like, oh yeah, he had a fight with Hartford in the preseason. Like, when the hell was Lyndon Byers on Hartford? I didn't even know that happened.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he did. You're right, yeah.
But it would be just stuff like that, right? If you never saw footage or anything, and it was just like, I don't know, you know, and all of a sudden, but
you're right.
Somebody, oh, I was there for it, and, you know, or whatever, you know, because there's lots of, you know, just inner squad or preseason that, you know, just wasn't around, especially in the 80s.
True.
You know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mention that because in one of the Sandy McCarthy, Marty McSorley fights, I think it was a preseason game, and there were actually two fights, I believe. In one fight, McCarthy apparently smoked McSorley, but that footage hasn't surfaced. But what has surfaced is the real long marathon brawl that they had that McSorley actually edged out McCarthy in. And I remember there was someone on FC that would, but hey, I was there at that game. And early before that, McCarthy, you know, gave it to Marty pretty good, you know, or something like that. And I was like, oh, wow, I never even knew about that. You know, yeah. Like, that's great, great info. And it's, you know, the guy's not just fucking bullshit. You know, he's a regular on FC for years, you know, so it's kind of like, oh, there's some legitimacy there. You're like, wow, okay, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, that's been the real cool thing going back to, you know, Jay with the newspaper articles. Like, he sent me some stuff there. It was like, oh, you know, oh, and this guy tangled with so-and-so in the exhibition series. It's like, really? Like, you never would have known that stuff, right? But, you know, somebody took the time to, Jay took the time to dig up the newspaper article, and oh, there it is, right? And it's just like, who knew? There's just like so much.
I know.
There's just so much stuff out there that it's just unknown, you know, and like yeah. You said, and then, yeah, especially with the minor league stuff, and I've often said this even on this show with getting yourself or Dave or just even Nick or Jay out in Iowa, just everyone in their different pockets has had a different fan experience, right? And so to hear their story about how they got into it or who, you know, what team they followed or fans of, and they can give you the lowdown, you know, and as much as the NHL is tough, minor league stuff's even harder, you know, to go back and find footage, let alone this guy playing here and there, and, you know. And so when you could talk to different people and from different areas that, oh, yeah, I was there, I remember that, and it was, you know, to kind of go back to the whole thing, right? It's you know, without this whole social media message board / Twitter, Facebook thing, I mean, you know, you wouldn't know any of this stuff.
That's true. You're right. Yeah. I'm glad at the very least, even though I'm not a big social media guy, you know, in general, but I mean, I'm glad there is some sort of central area that we can kind of commiserate in, you know, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or something like that. You know, I'm glad we at least have that, and, you know, so we have some way to sort of share the knowledge.
No, exactly. And, yeah. And like I said, every day when I get on Twitter and start scrolling and just get mad at the world, and I didn't think there were so many stupid people in the world. You know, I've often like, oh, I should just get off Twitter. I hate this thing. As much as I loathe it, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's Steve putting up a Miller article. Okay, I like Twitter again. You know, and it's just like, you brought me back. You know, so yeah.
Glad I could pull you back in, man.
Yeah, no, it was, no, man, I appreciate you coming on tonight. I know it's late out there, so I won't keep you any longer, but definitely, we will definitely do this again, for sure. And I'm pumped that you're back and writing, man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I just, I'm going to be keep continuing on, and, you know, hopefully there'll be a much more steady flow of, you know, information coming from the site.
Excellent. Well, once again, folks, it's whenprovertwasking.com. Check it out. Steve got great articles, and I'm pumped you're back. And again, it was great talking tonight, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, hey, man, Darren, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. You know, you really, you know, open up your world to guys like myself, you know, and sort of like help put us out there. You know, it's one thing to be on Twitter and post an article on there, but it's another thing to kind of come on the podcast and talk about it. You know, and other people sort of hear about it and get wind of it, and they want to check it out. So it's really great. Thanks for having me on. You know, anytime you want to talk fights, you know, feel free to call.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. And excellent. Have a good night, man.
All right, you too, man. Stay safe. Take care.
You too.
All right, bye.
And you people that don't like fighting, how many of you did you walk out and get a coffee while that was on?